Shambhadaya Krishna Prasthabhudale Shambhadaya Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Saraswata Devi Gauravani Pracharane Niravishesha Shambhadi Vastadare Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Silivete Gadadhar Shavasti Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, capital 10, chapter 23, verse 41. Nunam,
Nunam
Bhagavato,
Bhagavato
Maya,
Maya
Yoginam,
Yoginam
Api,
Api
Mohini,
Mohini
Yad
Yad
Vayam
Gurav
Nranam Smarte
Muhya Mahe
Vija
Nunam
Bhagavato Maya
Yoginam
Api Mohini
Yadvayam
Gurava Mrana Svate Muhya Mahit Vija
Nunam
Bhagavato
Maya
Yoginam
Api Mohini
Yadvayam Gurava Naranam
Svate
Mukhya Mahit Vicha
Nam Bhagavato
Maya
Yoginam
Apidimon Nunam. Indeed,
Bhagavata
of the Supreme Lord,
Maya,
illusory potency.
Yoginam,
for great mystics,
Api,
even
Mohini,
is bewildering,
yet
since
Vayam,
we,
Gurava,
spiritual masters,
Nirnam,
of society in general,
Svate,
about our own real interest,
Muhya Mahe,
have become bewildered.
Dvija,
Brahmanas.
Translation.
The illusory potency of the Supreme Lord certainly bewilders even the great mystics, what to speak of us. As Brahmanas, we are supposed to be the spiritual masters of all classes of men. Yet we have been bewildered about our own real interest. Text 42. Just see the unlimited love these women have developed for Lord Krishna, the spiritual master of the entire universe. This love has broken for them the bonds of death, their very attachment to family life. For superficially, the husbands, fathers, father-in-laws, and so on were the ladies' gurus or teachers, yet the women had become perfect in Krishna consciousness, whereas the men had fallen into the darkness of ignorance. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, upon returning home, the ladies showed transcendental ecstatic symptoms such as trembling of the body, shedding of tears, standing of the bodily hairs on end, discoloration of the complexion, and crying out, "O pleasure of my life, O Krishna," with faltering words and so on. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti goes on to state that while one may object that it is not fitting for a woman to love anyone other than her husband, here the husbands themselves point out that they are gurus only in imitation of the Supreme Lord, who is Jagat Guru, the universal teacher and spiritual master. The husbands noted that the women, having perfected their transcendental attachment for Krishna, did not have even a trace of attachment left for home, husband, children, and so forth. Therefore, from that day on, the husbands accepted those ladies as their worshipable spiritual masters and no longer thought of them as their wives or property. Translation, just see the unlimited love these women have developed for Lord Krishna, the spiritual master of the entire universe. This love has broken for them the bonds of death, their attachment to family life. So we see that in normal society there are rules for governing the people. And in each country there are different rules, but there are some common elements as well. And therefore we look at the Varnashram system, and we will see there are regulations there for all types of people and different levels, from Tamagun to Satvagun, and rules for persons in different stages of life, unmarried, married, and renounced. And we consider that the Varnashram system rules are superior to the rules of the society of the rest of the world. Why? Because, of course, they are connected with the Vedas and recommended by the Vedas themselves. They're scriptural. Whereas most of the rules of society we see in other countries are simply legal things that have come about over the ages, and not much related to scripture. That is one reason. The other is, of course, that we do consider the Vedas superior even to any other scripture that may have be following social rules such as Islam. That's one thing. And why they're superior is because they're more thorough in analyzing the duties. Other societies may have general rules for everybody, but we know that different people are qualified for different things in society. So therefore, should we have specific rules for a specific type of people? So we have rules for Tamagun people. They will be different from the rules for the Satvagun people. But most societies use the rules, same rules for everybody. So we'll have different types of rules for different types of people in the society. Similarly, the rules for Grihastha are different from the rules for the Brahmachari or the Grihastha or the Vanaprastha and Sannyasi, because they are doing different things. So in this way, the Varnashram system admits that people are of various types, and therefore they are qualified for different types of rules and regulations. Nevertheless, the whole goal of the Varnashram system is ultimately to detach people from material enjoyment, and they do that by regulating the activities of their senses, and finally directing them towards the worship of the Lord, which is usually absent in most social rules in most societies. If it is a religious rules like Islam also has, then of course that's also directed towards God. We have these rules all dedicated to ultimately to the Supreme Lord. Yet we will see that Lord Chaitanya does not think very highly of Varnashram in general. He kind of puts it at the bottom. And above Varnashram, maybe the Brahmins are the best, or the Brahmins, those who follow nicely are good, but above those are the Vaishnavas. And when Madhvas in Udupi said, the goal of life is to follow Varnashram system, and Lord Chaitanya said, no. He rejected that as a goal in life. And similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, we'll find discussion of Varnashram system, that's Karma Yoga. And then superior to that is Gyan Yoga. When you come to Satvagun, then you progress to Gyan Yoga, which means it's superior. So the bottom step of the ladder is Karma Yoga and Varnashram. Then you go to Jnana with renunciation, then to Yoga, then to Bhakti. So these are all of them are superior to Varnashram. So it's only the beginning stage for many people, and therefore recommended. And similarly in the Bhagavatam, we will see that if you give up the Varnashram system and you only worship the Lord, there is no loss. Why? Because you have a higher qualification, faith in the Lord. That is higher than the qualification for Varnashram. Therefore, if you follow the higher qualification, if you give up lower duties, there's no sin incurred. So therefore, all the scriptures will indicate that higher than Varnashram is Bhakti. For normal people in this world, Krishna recommends, you should do Varnashram, as he told Arjuna. Yes, you should not renounce, you should not do sankhya and jnana. Rather, you should do your duties in varnashram and fight the battle, etc. For people who are less qualified, they should simply follow that. But they should also include a little bit of the worship of the Lord. That is also there. So, here we see that the brahmanas were following the rules of varna and ashrama. They were involved in the varna ashram system. They were doing karma yoga. And there's nothing wrong with that because it's scriptural. Yet, if in the process of doing that we omit the Lord, then that is worthless varnashram system. That is called asuric varnashram, where we don't worship the Supreme Lord at all. That is useless varnashram. The whole goal is missing, and the whole impetus is missing. The whole inspiration is missing, and therefore it does not work properly. So if one is to follow the varnashram system with great dedication, still, one should not forget, one must worship the Lord. So that is what the Brahmanas forgot to do. Now we can say that, yes, there was not all their fault, because it is very difficult to recognize the Lord when he comes as Krishna. If he had shown himself as the universal form or Mahavishnu, then yes, they would have offered respects. But when he comes as a cowherd boy and asks for food, it's very difficult for them to see that this is God. So, you know, there's some excuse for them to make a mistake like this. Nevertheless, we see that the wives, on the other hand, very naturally, spontaneously recognized Krishna as their Lord, and they had greater attraction for him as their Lord. More than their Lord, they just had attraction for him spontaneously, but he was the Lord. In that way, we should not think that therefore the Brahmanas really had an excuse, because their wives were under the same conditions, yet they developed very great attraction for Krishna. In spite of the fact that he was a cowherd boy. Brahmanas also realized this, that their wives were actually more fortunate than they were. And though they had all knowledge by studying the Vedas, etc., the wives who had not studied the Vedas were even more advanced than them, because they had realized Krishna and had become attracted to him, where they had not been able to recognize him. So that is what they express here. We have been bewildered by the Lord's external energy. And therefore, though we pose as being gurus, we're actually not gurus. And instead, Krishna is the guru of the whole universe. And these women, they have recognized this, and they have surrendered to him. Therefore, there's no fault in the women surrendering to Krishna, because he is supreme guru. And if they disobey us, there's no fault, because we are not the gurus. We are the husbands, but we're actually not guru, because we're ignorant. So there's no fault if these women have loyalty to Krishna, because he is the supreme guru of the whole universe. So in this way, the Brahmanas actually regret their mistake and realize their fault of ignorance, etc. So this is commendable. If a person makes a mistake and he's able to realize his foolishness and his ignorance and see the superiority of others who are recognizing the Lord, then this is a very good quality. It is by realizing our mistakes that we can recover ourselves and progress in Krishna consciousness. So the Brahmanas realized that they were on a very low level, lower than their wives, not in terms of varnashram, but in terms of spiritual advancement. So we see there is a little tension here between the varnashramic rules and spiritual life. And spiritual life may contradict the rules of varnashram. But we should not simply follow the varnashramic rules. We have to have obedience to spiritual life because that is higher. So under normal circumstances, as much as possible, we try to follow the varnashram. But ultimately, spiritual rules have higher priority for us. So who is on a spiritual, higher spiritual level, then we have to give respect to that person, no matter who they are. So they may be low caste, they may be women, or whatever. But if their spiritual advancement is that great, then we have to worship them. They become more respectable. So therefore, the husbands began respecting their wives because they were on a higher level, even though in the varnashram system, the wife should respect the husband. So they were giving respect to their wives. So why? Because of the spiritual rule. So this is also indicated in Bhagavad Gita itself, where we have the different levels. Karma Yoga is there, then Jnana Yoga, etc. So under normal cases, we follow the rules of Karma Yoga. However, Jnana is higher. So we have rules instituted for people on the level of Karma Yoga, but the rules of Jnana are actually higher. So on this basis, Krishna argues in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, well, I cannot fight the war for this reason, that reason, and he quotes Shastra and everything that, you know, should not kill our relatives, and says it's all sinful, etc. So what is Krishna saying? He says, oh, this is all illusion. Nobody's a relative. Everybody is spirit soul anyway, and spirit souls don't die. So therefore, from the level of Jnana, you can fight and you can kill because nobody's actually killed, only the bodies are killed. So on the level of Karma Yoga, there's birth and death, etc., and sin incurred by killing certain types of people. On the level of Jnana, everybody is spirit soul and nobody dies. So what is the lamentation for death and all that consideration on the level of Jnana? So Jnana is higher than bhakti, than karma. But, of course, higher than the rules of Jnana are the rules of bhakti. That is higher still. So if one gives up the rules of Jnana even, and practices bhakti, one does not incur any sin for that either. So, and here, that way we have different rules, and if one practices the superior process, then one can give up the rules of the lower type of thing. So, if the women have come up to this high level of spiritual development, of bhakti, then they are free to give up the lower rules of strict obedience to the husband, etc. There's no breach of dharma, because dharma is lower than bhakti. And with this sense, Krishna says, Sarva dharma parijana mamekam shamana praja. All dharmas are inferior, and worship of me only is supreme. So this is with the women. This is the evidence the women could give. Why we do this and there's no sin incurred. And Krishna says, Tam sarva papadya moksha sami. I free you from all sin. No sin attached to this. So we always have to recognize that bhakti is superior to all these other processes. And of course we'll see the same thing in relation to the gopis. Go to Krishna, but they incur no sin from leaving their husbands and wives, husbands and families and children, etc. They don't incur any sin also because they are attracted to Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and that bhakti is higher than anything else. So what that shows is that ultimately bhakti, that the force of bhakti and the attraction of bhakti overcomes every other restriction there may be. And those rules have no more significance for the devotee who's attracted to Krishna. And there's no sin incurred by leaving everything and simply surrendering to Krishna. The only consideration is that one has to be qualified. And if one superficially and artificially gives up when one is not qualified, gives up everything, later on one will have to come back to that same position. So that's not advised. One should not superficially renounce everything. Those qualified for Sarvadharma Prajaja, one can do it. But if not qualified, don't do it. And therefore, Krishna tells Arjuna, you fight and do this and that in the battle and all that. And do your duties and at the same time worship me. So as long as we're not qualified, then we'll have to combine the two. Do devotional service and follow some of the rules of Varnashram, which are not contradictory to bhakti. And in this way, we can gradually progress to that stage where we become completely detached, and then we give up all the rules completely. So this is the way in which the Varnashram interacts with the bhakti yoga. Okay, any questions?
You said the activities, you classified karma yoga, jnana, and bhakti. And what are the activities you said in karma yoga compared to, in relation to the example of day to day?
What are the activities in karma yoga?
Yeah.
Oh, well, of course, they're different for different groups of people, like sudras work, and vaishyas make money, and they have rules to govern that conduct in life. And of course, kshatriyas are fighting, so they have their specific duties. Brahmanas study the Vedas and teach the Vedas and do sacrifices. They have specific activities. Then they have general ones that everybody should follow. So therefore, they have sense control rules, all of them. But the Brahmins have more strict sense control than the others, more rules to follow. They have all of these social things like samskaras, marriage ceremony, etc. Have to go through marriage, control the senses in that way. And then they have their daily duties they have to perform every day. They have to get up, they have to bathe, they have to do so many things, they have to do the Sanya Vandana, they have to do offerings, they have to give charity, they have to study the Vedas. This is the Brahmins, of course. All throughout the day, their activities are regulated, what they have to do. Up until they go to bed. Everything is regulated. Rules for everything. Mm-hmm. And similarly for the other castes as well. But the rules are less for the sudras, because they're not so qualified. And so they have simple rules. Nevertheless, they have to follow general principles of honesty, etc. General qualities are there they have to follow. And they have to follow marriage, etc. Samskaras also. So all of that is there to control the senses. Regulate life by control of the senses.
You know, in India there is this common thing that do your duty and that's it. So does that come from
here? Yeah, well, that is an emphasis upon the karma yoga aspect. Of course, in the modern world, that do your duty has become a little distorted, because do your duty is what? What does it mean? But we have Svadharma, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam. So your Svadharma is your particular duties according to the Varnashram system in your particular caste in your ashram. Let's say you are a Brahmana and you're a student. So your Svadharma is to follow the Brahmacharya ashram. And later on, then you may have to follow Grihastha ashram in your Svadharma as a Brahmana. And so as a Grihastha Brahmana, then you have certain types of work you can do and certain things you should not do, types of work. So you can engage yourself in doing sacrifices and teaching and things like that. But you should not take employment from others. And these are things like that. So there's rules like that for everybody in their particular dharma. So that is their duty, so to speak. Not simply vague duties like, you have to obey your parents at all times or something like that, even if they're demons or whatever. That's not Svadharma so much. And maybe it's part of Svadharma, of course, but it's not the whole thing. And of course, these things are modified by the conditions of whether they are worshipping the Lord or not worshipping the Lord. So actually, it's not real Svadharma at all if it is atheistic. It is Asura Dharma.
There are certain puja that we are doing for the king of Krishna, for Krishna Janmashtami, and other puja that we are doing. And then we think that the bring the Supreme Lord in the daily function. We do the lot of action and students in other things. So, like, after becoming Krishna conscious, if it's centered around Krishna, can we do that?
If there's no contradiction to our philosophy, in other words, there's no problem with it, though the rituals may be slightly different. It's not a real problem with that. Main thing is a philosophical difference where one uses mantras which are not representing Krishna as supreme, but rather as a devata or something, then that we have to reject. If it's simply worshipping Krishna in general without any mantras which put him on a lower level, then there's not a problem with that.
But we have
an
understanding that Krishna is the
Supreme
Lord.
Yeah, then it's no problem.
And but the verses that is given in the book is like in Pandarata, we are talking about that in particular puja. Puja, like we are doing aarti, but I don't know that any particular verses of puja for Krishna. They normally do puja.
Yeah, so the process is maybe slightly different there. That's not such a big problem, actually. In our particular Sampradaya, we've adopted certain things, and even those are not right codified in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. They'll seem to be codified later by, particularly by Bengalis. So basically we're following some Bengali type of current Bengali forms of arti, etc., which aren't even that prevalent in North India also. And particularly only Bengal is familiar with that type. So, in other words, it's a little bit arbitrary in that sense. The main ideas of all of them is the same, but the details are a little different. So, whether one does one or the other really doesn't matter so much.
And in there are archana in the Kavikya, they say that we have archana for Krishna. They do the Om Keshava and Om Narayana, and they do the Tulasi, the archana for the world. That normally is very representative of India.
Yeah.
But we don't have that kind of archana.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be done. There's nothing wrong with it.
When you said to follow Varnashram and Brahmana is supposed to do certain activities, so we find in our society of devotees also, some devotees are given Brahman initiation, but we said they should not take employment. We find that some devotees take employment.
Everybody does. Well, as I said, for the devotee, all these things are secondary. Anyway, Varnashram is a secondary principle for us. And the other point, of course, is in Kali Yuga, the Varnashram system is not practical to follow in detail anyway. We can take certain elements as far as our controlling the senses are concerned, etc., and rules of conduct, etc. But it is very difficult to institute the whole system. Very, very difficult. Now, of course, those rules had a specific significance for them, and it's generally better if any of the higher castes are independent and don't take employment. It is better for them, because then they're not controlled by other people and they can do what they want, and they have some little independence. Whereas if you're employed by someone else, then you're dependent, and therefore you compromise your values also. And so that is why they emphasize the independence. But in Kali Yuga, it is very difficult to implement that very strictly. So one has to be a little more careful, therefore, in one's work, that one's a little detached from the whole process and from everybody involved. Otherwise, one gets influenced also.
Is it also good to have this mood? Like, for example, if you take Brahman initiation, then most of the activity should be for Brahmana. You have to remain, you have to work a little bit, as you said.
I mentioned the other day that we get what is called Brahman initiation, but that's not the significance. The significance is we're a Vaishnava, because Brahmins are secondary, as I said again. And previously, they did not have that Brahman initiation incorporated as part of the Vaishnava initiation. That was an independent thing. And you took it when you were a child anyway. And if you were a Vaishya or Kshatriya or Brahmana. So not even a Brahmana, if you're a Vaishya, you would also get the thread. Or a Kshatriya. But it would be independent of the Vaishnava Diksha. So the two are not inevitably connected. In other words, it's not that you must become a Brahman to become a Vaishnava. That is aparad. Anybody can become a Vaishnava by qualification of faith. So we cannot inevitably connect the two things together. They can be separated. And the only reason the Brahmana Diksha was given, Brahmana initiation was given, was because of the challenge of other sampradayas that Gaudiyas are inferior because of this and that, whatever. And to show that the Vaishnava had whatever the Brahmins had, then he did this. That's all. So it's only a social show, we can say, for other persons. That's all, the Brahmin part of it. And that Vaishnava Diksha is superior to Brahmanism and includes it. And therefore, one can have a Brahmin Diksha also at the same time, once one is qualified as Vaishnava. Only to show that one is qualified for whatever Brahmins are qualified for. That's all. But it doesn't mean you have to do all those duties in exactly the same way, because they may be contradictory to what the Vaishnava does.
Maharaj is also right that Prabhupada and other acharyas said that it's not necessary to take second initiation
in a sense that of course the Brahmana part is not necessary at all in one sense, and most of the Gaudiyas don't do that. It's quite independent. The other of course is that the holy name is independent of Diksha. But along with that, chanting the holy name, one should take instructions. Otherwise, one is in only the stage of namabhas, and one cannot chant purely. So therefore, one does have to accept at least siksha guru for that. And the reason why we also take the diksha is to get mantras for worshipping the deity, so we can engage our senses in worshipping Krishna. And deity worship is also one of our vidhis, though it is secondary to chanting the holy name. So for that purpose, we have diksha.
One should have that mood also to aspire to advance such a way that they can get second initiation and worship the deity, or it's not necessary?
Well, Jiva Goswami seems to be of two opinions. In one place he says that most people are disturbed in heart, and therefore they should engage all their senses, even though holy name is independent of diksha, etc. We should engage all of our senses because we're very disturbed. Therefore, we should also do deity worship. So he recommends deity worship, and therefore taking diksha. In another place in the Bhakti Sandarbha, he says that deity worship depends on pancharatrik rules, which require pancharatrik diksha, whereas Bhagavat Marga depends only on the holy name. So the emphasis he put is upon the holy name and Bhagavat Marga. However, those who are rich grihastas can engage in deity worship. Therefore, they can take diksha. So he gives that as a thing for rich grihastas there in that statement. Because they got money to spend on the deities, etc. Parksha.